How does the way a woman gives birth influence her breastfeeding experience? And why do we almost never talk about this?
Because we're so afraid to hurt people's feelings from just telling them the truth.
How is the pressure to get your baby sleeping through the night disrupted breastfeeding relationships?
It's normal for a breastfed baby to feed at night. It's protective of your supply. Their blood sugar cannot regulate and make it completely through the night without milk at some point. It is protective against SIDS. Welcome back to Healthy as a Mother. I am your co-host, Dr. Morgan McDermott, and this is the show for becoming and being a mother, where Dr. Leah and I share our natural women's health and motherhood guidance that you've been looking for through our fresh, functional, and balanced lens. And today on the episode, it is a very nuanced and important conversation for anybody who is pregnant or wanting to breastfeed. We're going to talk about five different things, different concepts and ideas that can ruin breastfeeding for you between you and your baby. Usually, most of them come kind of early on in those early weeks, but there's a lot that I think would also surprise you. And this is just stuff that I so very wish I could shout from the rooftops that every single woman would be armed with as they go in to the final weeks of their pregnancy and that they have in their toolbox so that they can pull from it and reference back to it. This is all stuff that we need to have passed down through our lineage and between our friends and learning about because it's just that important. And so that's why we made this episode today. And I hope you learn a lot. So let's go ahead and dive in.
All right, Dr. Morgan, we are back to discuss five things that ruin breastfeeding. And there's no one I could imagine interviewing about this topic than you.
You're so complimentary and sweet in your intros. Oh, and I feel like whenever I'm introing you, I'm just like, and let's get it. Blah, 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 blah. I need to be more aware of that. I'm going to just shower you in compliments.
It's okay. It's okay. It's my love language. I give it out. And even if I don't get it back, I can't help it.
Well, I have the thoughts. I just don't really tell you. But whenever I do tell you, you always love it.
That's what my husband says. I think it. That's what he says. I think that you're great. I think that you're pretty. I'm like, anytime you think it, just say it. Use your words. Say it out loud.
There's a line in, Penny and Sparrow is my favorite band. And there's a line in their song that's called Mattering Ram. And it says, do you think I'm pretty? Can you think it louder? Because it's like the same thing. Like, can you tell me what you think? And it's like, that's such a common issue, I think, with couples. But
yeah, and it's not like I don't think that I am without him saying it. It's more just, I don't know,
it's nice to hear. Yeah, everybody has their thing where it fills them up. Like for me, it's more the quality time. Like I need to stare into your eyes and I need to be told your every thought. Like, what did you think about during the day? Like, what, you saw a bird? What kind of bird was it? Like, tell me about it. What did you think about it? What was your dream? What were you thinking about when you were driving? Like, you know, that's how I feel connected.
Yeah. And then I want that too. That's also something my husband doesn't do well. He's really good at acts of service, like really good.
So is Wes. Yeah.
Yeah. But that's okay.
We need to get them together and then you and I could be together.
Yes, that's right. You're my sister wife. It's perfect. Okay. Well, back into breastfeeding. Let's talk about it. Okay. First and foremost, you have a lot to get through, but I want to know a question that we were asked. How does the way a woman gives birth influence her breastfeeding experience? And why do we almost never talk about this connection?
Okay, so I'll start with the latter part of the question. So I think that we don't talk about it because there is a sense of shame that a lot of people will feel, or we feel like we are shaming moms when we say that cesarean birth has some impacts and ramifications on breastfeeding, which it does sometimes, not all the time. Mm-hmm. And it's like, to me, I think, wouldn't we want to know that though? Like, wouldn't you, if I had a cesarean and I was a first-time mom and I just didn't have this information already, I would want to know that so that I could best prepare myself or counteract some of those effects and have this, like, be armed with knowledge. It's not shaming. It's not like, even if somebody chose a cesarean for whatever reason, it doesn't even matter. They still can be, you know, prepared with how this might change their early breastfeeding phase so that it can be successful if that's something that they want to do. Mm-hmm. So I think that we don't talk about it because we're so afraid to hurt people's feelings from just telling them the truth. And it's like, we have standards as humans that if we live outside of these standards, there's going to be dis-ease, you know, like we are a type of animal, even though, yeah, we're really different from other animals. And so if there is something like we were we are born and we are expecting certain things as babies. And then, like, as we grow up, we're expecting our diet to consist of a certain amount of foods. And if we don't eat those things, it's not that we're shaming people who don't eat those things. It's just saying, like, well, yeah, I mean, there's a higher level of disease instance when everything that you eat is made in a factory. Like,
Yeah.
it's not shaming. Now, I can understand that it's like, well, some people can't afford fresh food. And that is a problem. But that doesn't mean we don't talk about it. We don't just go, no, like, there's people who can't afford it. And so, shh, don't ever
Like,
talk
no
about
one
what
should
we
know.
should be
Yeah.
eating because, you know what I mean? Like,
Yes.
there has to be able to be a both and in these conversations. And so, anyway, the way that a baby is born can have an impact on mom's breastfeeding for a lot of different reasons. And this is actually where, this is not, probably not what you're expecting me to say, but this is actually where I'm pro epidural or pro cesarean in certain instances. And I'll get to that too. Because, okay, well, let's just talk about the two really obvious. No, wait, hang on. Let me think about how I want to talk about this. So, the way a baby is born affects your hormonal loops, and breastfeeding, the immediate change from the baby and the placenta out of your body, and then stimulation at the breast, even if you don't stimulate the breast, your milk is still going to be made and come in to a certain extent because it is the next expected hormonal cascade. It is better if we have baby at the breast and stimulation and colostrum out. But even women who, potentially like their babies pass, which is tragic, or they are a surrogate, or they are putting them up for adoption, or they don't want to breastfeed at all, they still have to take measures to s stop their milk from coming in, like binding them, or sometimes they take medications. So your breasts inherently do want to make milk after the baby comes out. But some things that can impact it where it maybe doesn't come in as like fully, or there are these factors that are kind of complicating, would be if we do have a birth where there's IV fluids given, which is in a situation where maybe you just need IV fluids because you're dehydrated. You will be getting IV fluids if you have an epidural, or if you have Pitocin, or if you have a cesarean. Okay. And so in these instances, IV fluids push more water and saline into our bodies, and it also puts it into the baby's body. And that comes into importance later in a second here. But so what can happen is that after your baby is born and your milk is doing its normal physiological thing of coming in, quote unquote, because really it's just changing. It's transitioning to regular white milk because colostrum is milk. This is a hill I will die on. I need to make t-shirts. Colostrum is milk. Actually,
You
I'm gonna do
should.
that.
We have a merch store. I'm gonna shamelessly plug our merch store. Why don't we add it?
We should add it. Write it
I
down.
bet everyone and their mom wants a shirt that says colostrum is milk. Hashtag
I'm gonna make an
only
assumption.
Morgan.
I'm gonna make an assumption and say, you all want this.
Yes, you want this. That's so funny.
Oh my gosh, I would
Colostrum.
wear it. I would wear it. It would be such a conversational piece. People would be like, what is, like, can you imagine like a 65-year-old man in a grocery store, like, what's colostrum? I'm like, oh, let me tell you.
You
Okay.
need to know.
So, anyway, colostrum is milk. And so, when it transitions into white milk, there is a period of time between like 1 and 3 days where the breasts will become very, very full. And it's not because they're actually full of milk, it's more of an in inflammation. It's interstitial fluid. It's kind of like edema or swelling of the breasts. Yes, they are also filling up with milk, but people erroneously think, oh my God, look at all, look at how much milk I have in here. And it's like, no, if you were to like pump or something, you would get a very small amount still because it's still just transitioning to what your newborn would need, which is a very small amount of milk for that first week. It does increase day by day, but it's so little. I mean, even the first couple of weeks, it's such a small amount that they need each feed. But you can become more engorged. Since I just said it is interstitial fluid, it is swelling. It's actually water in the in between cellular space of the like little clusters, the grape-like clusters that hold the milk, in between all of that, because the breasts are glands. So in between all of that space, there's like fat and there's tissue, and that whole area gets kind of like filled up with water because there's this big inflammatory reaction kind of thing that's happening. Well, inflammatory. It's physiological. It's supposed to happen. But anyways, that's what engorgement is. And engorgement can become worse if we've had IV fluids during birth. This matters because sometimes it's more difficult for a baby to latch on. So imagine a baby latching on to like a smooth balloon because it's so taut. Like there's no give to the tissue sometimes. It can be so hard and so taut. And so what a woman can do if this is happening to her, even if she didn't have IV fluids and she's just becoming very engorged for some reason, you can do something called reverse pressure softening. And reverse pressure softening, you can just look up a video on YouTube You're basically going to take your pointer finger and middle finger of both hands, and you're going to press them on either side of your nipple, like one above and one below for like 30 seconds, pressing straight into the chest wall. Then you'll go on like the left and the right side of the nipple. So you're creating this little like divot. You know, if you've ever rolled your ankle and you had a crazy swollen ankle and then you pushed into the swelling and then it creates this little pit. It's called like pitting edema. It's really gross to me, actually. But that's what you'll be doing to your breast. You'll be making more space around your nipple so that the elasticity of that nipple, your baby can pull it into your mouth. Some people don't know this. So then their babies go to latch and it like, it hurts them. Their babies are trying really hard and they're hungry, and maybe they're damaging the nipple, or maybe they're not getting a good enough latch to effectively remove the milk. So they're sitting, hanging on there for a long time. They're not getting good milk removal. And then all of a sudden, now it's like, oh my God, the baby's losing so much weight, and you can't, you don't have milk. And it's like, no, shut up, close the door, get out of here. Like, you know, especially in the hospital, this happens. It's so infuriating to me. And I kind of like led into the second part of this conversation, which is that when a baby is born to a mother who's been on IV fluids, there is a an amount of ounces of water weight that is going to go into the baby that is going to make them seem like they weigh more. So say the baby is born at like 9 pounds, and people are like, whoa, this is a big baby. But actually, maybe the baby's true weight is like 8, 12 or something. There's a certain, and we don't know. We don't know how many ounces. It's not like, oh, it's 3.5 ounces that you have to add or subtract from your baby's weight. No, we don't know. But we just have to keep this as a soft concept in the back of our mind of, as that baby is starting to learn to breastfeed over these first several days and the mom's milk is coming in over this course of this week, like, okay, keeping it in mind that that physiological weight loss that is normal for babies to lose up to 10% of their weight, maybe this baby is actually going to seem to lose more than 10%. And that's okay because there's all these other markers like pee and poop diaper output and mom, you know, feeling less engorged after the feeding. Like, it's clear the baby's getting the milk. We can hear the baby swallowing. There's other signs we can look to than just the weight, because we have to account for the baby will shed off that weight just like the mom does. You know what I mean? So these are two areas where birth affects breastfeeding. And just like, these should be facts that all providers know. This is not rocket science. This is not philosophical. This is a true hard fact. And it's really not that difficult to mitigate or to keep these concepts in mind. And it's so frustrating to me how many women are led astray or their entire breastfeeding relationship is ruined simply because there is providers that don't understand these concepts and cannot explain them to the woman and help her through it. And it's like the simplest shit ever.
No,
It's
I
not
know.
hard. As we're talking about birth and postpartum support, I want to share an underrated tip with you. That tip is to continue taking your prenatal. Pregnancy and postpartum are the most nutritionally demanding phases of a woman's life. Many women stop taking their prenatal after birth, but we recommend taking it for at least the first 9 months postpartum or the entirety of the time that you're breastfeeding. My favorite prenatal is Needed's Prenatal Multi, and it's the most robust formula that I've seen in the market. It contains bioavailable nutrients in their evidence-based dosages, well above the bare minimum that a lot of prenatals settle for. Their quality standards are top tier with transparent third-party testing, and over 10,000 practitioners now recommending the brand. And now we have the results from their IRB-approved clinical study that confirm the results of what we've been seeing clinically. Women who take the prenatal multi have significantly higher blood levels of critical nutrients for pregnancy and postpartum. This includes vitamin D, B6, B12, riboflavin, vitamin K2. Only women in the Needed group reach the adequate, sufficient levels of vitamin D. Vitamin D plays a big role in your immune health, your mood, and your energy production, all things that are really important during your postpartum season. And while there's many different ways that you can support yourself postpartum, continuing to take your prenatal is a really simple, easy way to cover all your bases. It's one of the most impactful habits that we can have, and Needed makes it easy. Learn more about the study at thisisneeded.com/thrive and use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 20% off your first order. Yes, healthy mother, like a little affirmation for yourself.
Okay, so you had mentioned that IV fluids can make the breast taut as engorgement is happening, and then it can also put an exaggerated weight on the baby, so then they panic. But you had mentioned that you actually recommend epidural, or what did you say about that?
Yes. Okay. So, because at the end of birth is motherhood. And sometimes birth is long and hard and it's like not happening. And it's like, okay, is there benefit of a baby being born physiologically, meaning no pain medications, no induction medications, just the mom's body doing it and the baby working together with the mom and it happening, yes, there's benefits there, of course. But if for some reason it's not happening and we need to, like, you know, she's getting so exhausted or she's not able to manage the pain anymore, or we do need to use some, she needs to be medically induced for some reason, or the birth has been going, but then now it's slowing down and we need to use some, whatever. There's so many reasons, okay, why we could potentially look into this. And this is where I'm so anti the Free Birth Society movement, because they have no room for these conversations in there. No room for this in there. Not even going to get into it right now, because it's like such a hot tub. They're getting like destroyed in the media right now. And it's like, do I think that it's fair that they're getting destroyed? Not necessarily completely, but it's also like there needs to be accountability. And some of the things that I've read from the women who've been harmed by the experience, I'm just like gobsmacked at how, at the lack of, what's it called? Like reverence for a baby's life that they have. Like it's clear that some of these babies have been suffering and they're so lackadaisical. Oh yeah, it's fine if they don't breathe. It's fine. Like, it's like, what? Anyway, whatever. Sorry. Okay. Sorry. I have a lot of feelings about that, which we don't need to go into right now. But okay. So sometimes we need to get an epidural to have the best chance at a vaginal birth. Sometimes we try that and we get the epidural and we are even on Pitocin and we're doing things. We've broken the water and we've done all this stuff and it's still not happening. And it's like, what is going on? What are we going to do? Are we going to press for a 3-day long Pitocin induction for this to happen? Like, you know, and sometimes people do that and it's one thing, but if she's been coming off of a 2 or 3 day attempt at physiological birth, now she's trying to, she's going to have what, three more days in labor. How much can we push her simply for the baby to be born vaginally or to be born, you know, how much is she going to push herself on Pitocin with no epidural simply to say that she didn't get the epidural or whatever. I feel like we need to have a softening. Am I still pro physiological birth? Always, like as much as possible. Yes. And I am not naive to the fact that things happen. And a woman's experience of her early postpartum is just as important to me as, and maybe even more than the way that the baby is born. Because if she is completely tapped out, completely exhausted, she went to the absolute ends of herself, however many day long labor or whatever it is, that she can barely even like remember, connect, look at her baby, take a breath, like have the energy to then put the baby to breast every 90 minutes, 2 hours for the next week with very little like long stretches of sleep and stuff like that, because that's the reality. That's what's actually happening at the end of this. Your baby is going to come into your arms and now you have to take care of them. No one else is going to take care of them for you. And you want to be able to be like there for it. And so even if we need to go get a cesarean because it's not happening, or of course, obviously if like an emergency thing happens, then that's life-saving and amazing. I'm so happy that that is an option for us. But so that's where I think a lot of this conversation nuance is lost in like, what are we doing here? Like, why are we pushing this so hard? And can a mom who's been in a 4 or 5 day labor actually be present to nursing this baby and make the milk and feed her body? And like the recovery of that, it just feels like it's going down like a video game or something. Like they're, the vitality of the player is just going like down, 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 down. And it's like, holy shit. Okay. At what point do we stop and we say, we need to reboot this because the journey is not over once the baby's born. The journey is just beginning once the baby's born.
Yeah. I mean, I can attest to that personally. This is what it's like being a person with Morgan as your doula, because that is a decision I had to make. And I'm sure a lot of it was because of your influence that was even on a subconscious level, because when I was in my labor with my daughter, you know, it was what, 72 hours at the point where we finally called it. And I wasn't in an emergency situation. Yes, I was at the ends of all of the time frames of breaking the water and, you know, have been in labor and blah, 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 all of that. But I knew from your experience and from what you had taught me, and what I was thinking in my mind is I wasn't just focused on the labor and the birth. I knew that, like, okay, as soon as this baby's born, it's now a marathon. And so even though I was trying everything I possibly could and I was so exhausted and all of this stuff, at the same time, I knew that at this point in my journey, the best decision for me and my baby, was to have a C-section. We made that decision. It wasn't what I wanted, but that was the best decision. And a lot of it was because I was preparing for postpartum and for breastfeeding. Yeah. And then it ended up being wonderful, you know, for various reasons. I have very sticky outie nipples and all these sorts of things. Like, you know, but it,
you have amazing nipples. Your nipples are so good.
Thanks. They're great in lots of reasons, but it is a factor that I considered because of you, that if I didn't know you, I probably would, it wouldn't even been in my mind. Just like you said, when with Gage, you were so focused on birth, pregnancy and birth, that you didn't even think about breastfeeding, and you never let me not know that.
Like, sorry.
Like, this is, no, it's perfect though, because I made that decision and it was probably the right decision to make. Even though I know other women who did the opposite decision for me, and they pushed and they depleted themselves, and it still ended up traumatic, you know, just to have that vaginal birth, which again, you have to work and it's hard. And like, I get all of that, but to also think about, okay, now I have a baby and I'm not going to be sleeping and I'm going to be breastfeeding. So I think it's just important. We are so good at speaking in the gray. You and I are just not black and white on anything. And like, everything is gray, and you have to have this nuance and this knowledge and this understanding and all of these things that you're calculating and thinking about to make these decisions. And I just think that is an important part that no one really thinks about with breastfeeding.
Yeah. And I mean, it comes from experience and working with people to say, you know, I feel like you and I always hold a standard. Mm-hmm. Like, we're always like, this is what we, and that goes back to the like anthropological facts about humans as an animal species. It's like, we know the mouse needs it to be like dark, and there needs to be lots of places for it to hide so that it can be not stressed out, so that it can live a good long life. Like, that's what a mouse would be doing naturally. Humans have their own set of expectations. That's the standard. We mm-hmm. need the standard. That's, you know, you put gas fuel in a gas car, you put diesel fuel in a diesel car. Like, there has to be a right way to do it. Mm-hmm. And then you intersect that with the reality before you of what's happening.
Yes.
And you tick down the list, and you know, the algorithm changes. It's like one of those flow charts where it's like, is this happening? Yes, no. Okay, go this direction. Is this happening? Okay, yes, no. Go this direction. It's like a game, you know? It's like, yeah. Okay, how are we going to manage this the best way possible? And like, there's so many factors that influence that too. Like, who's your provider and what's going on, and what, you know, sometimes we do make the wrong choice, and like sometimes, or we're led astray, or like whatever. So anyway, I just wanted to say that because yeah, it's not what people expect. I bet that people expect somebody like me to say only ever physiological birth ever to the mm-hmm. ends of the earth, even if it kills your baby. Like, yeah. No, like, no, no. Or it kills you. Because yeah, my birth with Gage was good, but it was very long. And I was like, so tired. I don't regret not having an epidural or not going to the hospital with him or anything. But I can see how, and I had a couple friends around that time have like an extra whole day to their birth, like another 24 hours. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, no.
Yeah.
No, I wouldn't, you know, anyway, whatever. Okay. So yeah. That's okay. The first part of the five things that can ruin breastfeeding is the way the baby is born. And if there are not steps taken to mitigate certain interventions that took place.
Yeah. I love that. Okay. So I know that you're really passionate. I love how fire you are right now. So tell me, what's the worst breastfeeding advice that you are always battling?
Okay. This is something that I think I'm just going to say it. It should be considered malpractice. There should be an ability for patients, for women to battle being given the advice to not feed their newborns, but every 3 to 4 hours, or scheduling their newborns, or anything outside of the realm of following their cues and knowing that you should expect that you're going to be feeding them every like 90 minutes to maximum 3 hours, like a max 3 hours would be what would be a normal situation for most newborns if we are following lactational physiology and theory. Okay. Mm-hmm. So in the hospital, unfortunately, babies are born every single day in this country in 2025, and the mothers are told not to feed them except for every 3 to 4 hours. And I know it's different in a lot of hospitals too. They don't say that. They say, follow the baby, not the clock, like whatever. And that's awesome and good. And that's how it should be. But unfortunately, it's not in every place. And it's buku banana pants, absolutely shamalama ding dong crazy that people are being told that. Under no circumstances, a baby. And that is actually exactly what my mom was told. Now, I know this was like 41 years ago or something, but that's exactly what my mom was told with my brother, my older brother. Was you can't feed him but every 4 hours, and he would be crying and crying and crying, and she would like have the impulse to want to nurse him, but the doctor would be like, no, don't, because he needs to have good full feedings, and don't do it. And it's like, What? And so she would just like walk around and like try to bounce him and help him fall back asleep and stuff like
Oh,
that. And he was starving.
terrible.
Yeah. And it didn't, her breastfeeding didn't work out. She got mastitis. No, go freaking
Yeah.
figure. I mean, it's just, it's so crazy. It's not even like, oh, sometimes that works. Like, I would say 1% of babies are going to be able to be fine with an every 3 to 4 hour feed as newborns,
Yeah.
especially in the very beginning of their life in the first several days. We need to be pregnant, expecting that the first at least 1 week, if not 2 weeks, of your life is you're feeding your baby basically every 2 hours. Like, it's around the clock. Now, at nighttime, here's where this is like a little bit of a different situation. At nighttime, in the middle of the night, until like if your baby has not regained their birth weight, so they're 3 days old, it would be very unlikely for a baby to regain their birth weight that early. Then you are still waking them up every like maybe maximum 3 hours, maybe 4 hours if they're a very good feeder at night. But you're still waking them up, even if they want to sleep longer than that, which usually they're not going to. But once they do regain birth weight, say you have a 8 day old baby, 9 day old baby or something, and now they're at their birth weight and they're starting to surpass that and they're starting to gain more. If your baby wants to sleep a longer chunk at night, you can allow that to happen now and move forward. Some people are going to scoff at this. They're going to totally disagree with this. They're going to say, I never woke up my babies and my newborns. And like, you get to just like, it's not that complicated, blah, 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 you know, whatever. They're like super, super naturalist people. And it's like, okay, try working with women for years clinically and see how that works out for their milk supply. Maybe you, N of one, it worked out for you to let your baby sleep 6 hours through the night from day one of their birth. But how many women have I worked with and seen, and also all the lactation consultants would never advise that. And it's like, that's all they do. That's all that the work that they do. If we want to set this woman up for success, here's the thing about that kind of advice. You can't come back from that.
Yeah.
If you allow that to take place for a couple of nights, your milk supply in many cases is irreversibly affected negatively. It's not coming back. Like, this is a sensitive time period, and we just need to be committed to how intense it is. It's very intense for the first couple of weeks. It will get easier. It's not like this forever. It's going to change, but milk supply is based on demand, and there's also this hormonal influence that needs to be brought in like right away. That's why they say, you know, it's ideal that you are nursing your baby within the first hour if you can, and that you're doing lots of skin to skin and all of these things, because they all affect the way that our brains and our oxytocin and our breasts are talking to each other so that we can have a good milk output. So I think that like this idea of waiting a certain amount of hours before we feed our newborns is absolutely ridiculous. Also, let's not forget, babies don't only feed or breastfeed to eat.
Yeah.
Okay, sometimes they might be thirsty, but it's their main comfort. It's their one main suckle comfort thing that they want to do. And some people will be like, well, just put a pacifier in their mouth. Okay, that's another really good way. That's not even on my list, but that's another really great way to ruin breastfeeding. I don't think the pacifier should come into. Not that you asked, but I'm just gonna say it.
No, I did ask telepathically, you knew it.
Okay, great. We're so connected that that's.
Yeah.
Pacifier shouldn't come into the picture until about 3 or 4 weeks, kind of like around the time that the first bottle comes into play into the scene. Again, outside of the situation of like necessity, if we have to do bottles before that, we do. But pacifiers are tricky because in the beginning, we want our baby to feed on us every time that they want to. And it's going to pull in this robust supply. It's going to tell the body, transition that milk from colostrum to white milk. Make about this many ounces because that's how money is coming out because the baby is feeding and that is good and that's what we need. Okay, blah, 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 blah. I understand. Trust me. All of my babies have these screwed up mouths that rip my nipples to shreds even after we get the revision. It's so painful. And I understand wanting to use pacifier early on. And the only time that I would say that that's okay is if you're very confident that your baby is gaining weight, your milk supply is coming in, you're sure that they've had a good feed, like you can feel it and your breasts feel softer. You've been watching them when they had that last nursing and they, you know, were swallowing and stuff. Their pee and poop out di diaper output is good. And then it's very, you're using the pacifier very like as a tool to soothe them. Excuse me, I'm like burping for a few, you know, minutes here and there. But it's not like, oh, they're crying. I'm shoving the pacifier in their mouth because that's a cue that they could be feeding from you and pulling in your supply. And again, it's just such a sensitive time period. It's like We just have to be committed to it. And then it all gets better and easier in time. But so scheduling your feeds for a newborn or having any kind of a schedule whatsoever is absolute horse. And then also this like chunk of time thing is probably the worst breastfeeding advice I've ever heard.
Oh my God, that's so good.
Electrolytes are trending, yes, but they have been in need of our human bodies for all of time. And if you're drinking another popular and delicious salty electrolyte, here's why you should be drinking Relight instead. First of all, have you ever considered the salt source of these other brands? Because most of them just use table salt. Yeah, table salt. You don't want that. Redmond's Relight Powders uses their unrefined ancient sea salt that they mine in Utah. This salt source contains 60 plus trace minerals along with calcium, chloride, potassium, and magnesium in two different forms, glycinate and malate. The minerals that they use in the Relight Powders are all in the appropriate proportions and forms too. The metabolic needs of pregnancy, healing postpartum, and milk making require more minerals than in other times of your life. Pregnancy itself demands huge increases in your blood volume, which takes, you know, more minerals. Relight is the perfect blend to be sipping during your pregnancy or during your labor even, and especially while you're breastfeeding. It tastes amazing, and my favorite flavors oscillate between mixed berry, lemon lime, and the strawberry lemonade. But you can try a sample pack and try all the flavors for yourself and see what you think. Use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 15% on your entire Redmond order. That includes their OG sea salt, other seasonings, bentonite clays, toothpaste, and more.
And so is there nipple confusion with pacifiers and or bottles? Tell us about babies on bottles. Do they feed different than breastfed babies? Because I feel like there's so much confusion around that.
Yeah, good question. So nipple confusion can be a thing. Sometimes people will say, no, it can't be a thing. But I would say it's not that they're confused. It's nipple preference. So let's just like get the term correct, I guess. Mm. Most people will say nipple confusion, but what they mean is nipple preference. So like bottle nipple preference. Because when we do start feeding them a bottle, which is like maybe for preference, maybe because we know we're going to go back to work, or we want partner involved, or we want a date night once in a while, or maybe you're exclusively pumping, or you're not even breastfeeding, whatever. You want to choose a nipple tip of that bottle that's like newborn or preemie, something not like a flow one or flow two, because yeah, it's so easy. The baby just like puts the bottle in their mouth. It's like dripping in. They barely have to work. And it's immediate milk too. Whereas a baby at the breast has to work a little bit to get the letdown. It takes like, you know, a minute or so of them suckling before the milk is going to start to come. And even if it comes, not all women have like a fire hose letdown. A lot of them just have this sort of slow drip. So they have to work harder at it. So a baby that is consistently given a really easy flow nipple tip can have nipple preference for that bottle over their mom if they have a slower flow. So we need to be as conservative as possible with those nipple tips so that it's also mimicking that kind of slow flow. And in addition, ideally, we're doing something called PACED, paced bottle feeding. Again, watch a video on YouTube, but it's a way to sort of mimic the way that breast milk is coming out of the bottle more than just them like sitting there and chugging it. Do I think that every person needs to be doing these things? Not necessarily, but I would start out with this method. If breastfeeding was really important to me and I wanted to breastfeed at the breast and that be my main way to feed my baby, because I would have this like caution around, yeah, them wanting to prefer the bottle. But okay. So do breastfed babies feed the same as bottle fed babies? No. And this is point number three of things that ruin breastfeeding. So far we have the way that birth can affect it. If we're not given the tools to mitigate those effects. Number two is scheduling your baby out. So dumb. Okay. Number three is this idea of weighted feeds, or a feed needing to be, no, weighted feeds are good. They're a tool, but don't take what you find on the weighted feed to be like law. And a baby doesn't feed a 3 or 4 ounces every single time that they come to the breast. It's just not what they do. So if we are, that's another problem with scheduling it out. If we're only feeding our baby every 3 or 4 hours and they're only taking in 1 ounce at that time because that's what they did or whatever, they fell asleep or, you know, they snack, they drink for different reasons than having an entire huge meal. Yeah. Like sometimes they do. Sometimes they chug down and they have a whole meal, and sometimes they don't. And you really will not ever know. And this infuriates women who want to know the data. And I used to be that woman who really wants to know the data. And also it was kind of out of necessity because my first had such weight gain problems that I did need to know. And I was tracking every little thing, and it was so stressful and so annoying, but it was necessary for that short period of time. And then afterwards it wasn't anymore, but we can't use weighted feeds at a lactation consultant's office as the end all be all.
Yeah.
So what I mean by that is, like, if somebody is having some problems and they go to the lactation consultant and they feed their baby, or they weigh the baby, they feed the baby, and then they weigh them again. That's what a weighted feed is. So you see how many ounces of milk the baby takes in, because you're weighing them before and after and subtracting out that weight. And it'll produce something like an ounce and a half or 3 ounces, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. We can't take that as every single feed that I feed the baby, this is how much they're getting. It is useful in constellation with other points of data, with overall weight gain in the week, with pee and poop diaper output, with how much they're swallowing, with the way that their latch looks and feels, with all sorts of other stuff. So use it as one data point. Do not use it as, like, the tip of the spear, most important thing, because it's not. Mm-hmm. And people misuse weighted feed data all the time.
Okay. That's really good to know. Okay. I have a question. This is, I love, because you're spicy again today. Let's do it. So where does Fed is Best fail mothers by shutting down real conversations about the challenges, the support, and the gaps, the systemic gaps in breastfeeding?
Okay. So this, I'm hoping I'm going to explain this in a proper way. Women are not stupid. Okay. We know that Fed is best. No one is trying to argue breastfeed to the end, and if they die, then whatever. Like, no one is saying that. Okay. No one is saying starve your baby because you don't make enough milk supply, because it's better than just going to formula. And Fed is Best is so dismissive of what women are actually lacking, which is support around breastfeeding. And whether that's in their workplace, their understanding prenatally of what is to be expected. You know, there isn't, like, standard breastfeeding classes. A lot of birth classes don't contain any breastfeeding information. But then there is this societal, like, wish and want, and then also sometimes pressure to breastfeed. But it's like, to me, it's a good pressure. We mm-hmm. should, we ought to try. Yeah. And if women disagree with me on that, like, sorry, we're just going to disagree.
Yeah, like, it's like having the pressure to want to eat well and to exercise and not be stressed. It's like, it is a good thing to strive for those things.
Exactly. Like, if you really fundamentally do not want to breastfeed, fine. But you are going against well-known health guidelines. And you, if that's the way that you feel and you want to adopt that stance and that posture, cool. But you cannot expect people to just be like, that's okay. Like, okay. Mm-hmm. And you're going to get some pushback. And if that's how you feel and you're very convicted in that, cool. But you're going to have some tough skin and not be offended by every little thing. If you try to breastfeed and you truly do not make enough milk, you don't have enough glandular tissue. First of all, that's way less common than we are told right now in this country. And we have a really good episode about the multitude of causes of low milk supply that we'll link in the show notes, that I highly, highly, highly recommend that anybody who's listening to this episode, you will absolutely love that episode. It's so important, so nuanced, and it's not, I don't feel like it's overwhelming. It's empowering, because if people are having a harder time making an adequate supply, or maybe they had a hard time with one baby and now they're pregnant with another baby and they're worried about it, there's so much that can be done, and it's so empowering. But Fed is Best is such a, you know, the marketing, formula marketing is a really dark, dark, unfortunately, I wish it wasn't. Mm-hmm. And I think I used to believe that it wasn't. I was like really rose colored glasses about anything in the OB world. Cause I'm like, it's babies. Everybody loves babies. Anything to do with babies is going to be like well-intentioned. And unfortunately, mm-hmm. it's not the case. And I think that we have to remember, just like with hospitals, even just like with midwives, I mean, still it's their job. But hospitals are a business. And so there is a certain drive for them to continue to increase their profits. Formula is a product that is their business. Mm-hmm. And their business model will do things that it maybe shouldn't do in order to get more formula purchased every year. Mm-hmm. And so their new tactic is approaching influencers and making these very convincing and like incomplete thought reels and different things that people will go, oh my gosh, see, Cardi B or whatever is using this kind of formula, and so I'm going to use it, because mm-hmm. like, that's how influencer marketing works. And it is highly influential. It's very manipulative. It doesn't talk about any of the risks. You know, formula could be considered almost like a pharmaceutical product in that kind of a way, that there are a set of risks that should be talked about in every single piece of this marketing, mm-hmm. because if the water's not boiled, if there's contamination, like there's things that people just don't even know when they go to give their baby formula. And then they find out about it later, or maybe their baby becomes sick and it's like, no one told me that, or I didn't know that there was any repercussions here. And fortunately, a formula exists. Like, I am very happy the formula exists. I think that there is a darkness to the marketing, and Fed is Best is so dismissive to the women that are fighting tooth and nail to breastfeed their babies without the support that they need, because Fed is Best dismisses all of the like maternity changes that could be taking place, the parental rights in workplaces that could be changed, because it's like, oh, well, you know, like you
You
can't,
just
oh, sorry, you
need
can't pump at
formula.
work. Like, just Fed is Best formula. And it's like, no, hold on. Like, this is a public health, that is anti-public health. And it's so clear. This isn't like woo-woo, again, like magical, like I want an idealistic world. It's breast, babies come out expecting breast milk, and it is far superior. Breast milk is best. No one is going to tell you otherwise. No actual medical practitioner can look you in the eyes, honestly, and tell you that there is an equality between an equality, not inequality, that there is equal nutrient profile between breast milk made by that baby's mother and formula. It's just not a thing. Okay. Now, if she does not have enough breast milk for whatever reason, then yeah, of course, maybe we have to supplement breast milk. Or sorry, we have to supplement with formula. Or maybe the whole thing has to be formula. Or for whatever reason, maybe she chooses not to. But again, that is not in line with what we know would be the best choice for a human baby to have. And I just think that it's so manipulative because, okay, so my point number four of the things that ruin breastfeeding is this idea of like combo feeding and how you can just make your life easier by giving the baby a bottle at night and feeding, because then the formula digests a little bit slower, so they're gonna sleep a little bit longer. And like, oh, it's fine, like we can just combo feed here and there and like it'll be great. So many women have no idea that starting the process of combo feeding, if it wasn't necessary, and it was just by convenience, which is the way that the formula marketing companies like position it, is eroding the mother's milk supply unless she is really careful to pump during that bottle and replace it. And it's like, why would she do that? Like, why would she? What's the point of that? You're choosing to feed them a bottle of something and then you're going to sit there and you're going to pump. Now, okay, if we have to pump our milk to get to the next day of our milk supply because we're going back to work, like that's a different thing. We should be pumping every time the baby's getting a bottle. But do we see how that's not like, it's not logical? No one explains how this might affect your milk supply because it's a supply and demand. So say, let's just make it easy. If your baby's getting 30 ounces a day and you're chugging along with that, and then now they're like 3 or 4 months old and you're like, I'm just gonna give a bottle at night. Okay, cool. So now that like 4 ounces that your baby, let's just pretend, because like by 3 or 4 months, maybe a feed is like a 3 to 4 ounce amount at each feed, or some of them, or especially like a big one right before bedtime. Because I know I just said that that doesn't happen. That doesn't happen with newborns. I'll tell you that. Okay, it does not happen with newborns, but maybe by 4 months we are. Okay. Now that's your body getting 4 ounces less every day of output pulled from the breast. So what's it going to do? In time, it's not going to make that 4 ounces. It's just going to reduce the set point of milk that it makes to 26 ounces, because 30 minus 4 is 26. And then it just continues and continues. And now the woman is maybe back at work. Here's the perfect storm. Okay, this is the perfect storm that happens to so many American women that is such a bummer because it doesn't have to happen. But they go back to work at 12 weeks. What happens to the breast milk supply at 12 weeks? It changes its set point to be regulated now to what the baby has been taking out. We're born usually, or sorry, the babies are born, and naturally, mom usually has a little bit of extra milk. Like she's making a little bit more than what the baby actually needs. And over the course of those first 3 months, the body is learning, okay, this baby drinks about 27 ounces or whatever it is per day. And at 12 weeks, there is this physiological change that happens in the breast where that's basically all that it's going to be making now. We can't really fluctuate this amount anymore. If we wanted to change the breast milk supply set point, we needed to do it before that first 12 weeks. Now, of course, there's going to be a one-off person who can and they change it and whatever, but on the vast majority, no. So she goes back to work. Her breast milk has regulated to what her baby is taking in. And now she's pumping to replace what the baby is drinking. And if she's not really good and diligent on her pumping schedule, maybe because her workplace doesn't allow it, she's embarrassed. she doesn't really have the education to know exactly how it should go, whatever. There's a myriad of reasons. Her pump parts aren't fitted to her properly because she didn't even have the concept that a flange size can change over time, or that a flange size that comes with your pump is not going to probably fit you. The chances of it fitting you are low. You're going to have to go get it fitted and buy something different. And so there's this perfect storm of things that happen. And then, so now she's maybe not pumping enough, like maybe not frequently enough or long enough to replace what her baby is drinking at home or in daycare or wherever the baby is. And she doesn't have that abundance, that little cushion to play with anymore. And now the baby is 4 months and going through the 4 month sleep regression. So she's been back at work for 1 month. What's going to happen? She's worried about her milk supply. She's like, am I making enough? Okay, now it's been a month and now my baby's awake all night long. Is my baby awake because they're hungry? They're wanting to nurse all night. See, I don't have enough milk. And then boom, I need to supplement with formula. So now we bring in the formula, and then now the whole thing starts to completely decline. And by 6 months, she's no longer breastfeeding. Or that is what happens to so many families. I have a confession to make that will probably knock the socks off of some of you crunchy moms. And please don't make fun of me for this, but listen, I don't make bone broth, okay? I don't. Sue me. I like to buy it instead. And maybe one day I'll get my act together, but for now I rely on brands like Fond to make real, actual bone broth from scratch, just the way that I would at home. Fond uses actual bones, not just rehydrated powders like a lot of brands. And their animals are verified regenerative, 100% grass-fed or pasture-raised, and the vegetables that they use are organic. And as you've heard us talk about in the past, there are certain foods, like bone broth, that have been used in pregnant and postpartum populations throughout human history, preferentially more so in those populations, due to their healing benefits on the body. So providing the connective tissue nutrition or optimal gut health and healing so that our bodies can make new life healthfully. Fond has several different flavors to choose from in beef and chicken broth, from unflavored to things like the classic garlic and lemon, to even a turmeric and black pepper with added health benefits. But then they also have foundational fats like tallow and lard as well. Make your family building season easy and choose Fond for your shelf-stable glass bottle bone broth that you can use in soups, with rice, or just for sipping like I do because they taste that good. Check the link in the show notes or go to fondregenerative.com and use code HEALTHYMOTHER for 10% off and nourish yourself with Fond.
That makes total sense. I feel like it's like, of course, how would it, this is what blows my mind, is that we don't know anything that's important. We are not taught anything important. I go back to high school all the time, and the amount of hours, even college, of pointless time spent in school learning pointless shit, excuse my language. Why do we not know about the basics, supply and demand of breastfeeding, or about like all the other things that we talk about on this podcast? It just blows my mind that it's like not the women's fault. It's not their fault, but we should all know this so that not even like that one person was like, oh, I just wasn't paying attention in class that one day when we learned about the physiology of breastfeeding. And then her aunt or her sister or somebody's like, well, don't you know, just like we do about knowing the names of the presidents or about, you know, pointless things like that. It's like someone else should know this to be able to help her. And instead, no one knows it. Even doctors don't know it. Even doctors don't care. It's crazy.
I know. And they don't, they're not taught. And it's like, I wonder why. I mean, there's such a nefarious...
We can go into the all rabbit holes. One time we should do a podcast on why is everything the way it is? Like the deep darkness of all the reasons why everything's messed up, because there's a reason for it all. And it goes...
There's a reason, and it almost always comes back to money.
Yeah. Yeah.
And money breastfeeding makes no one money.
Yeah, exactly.
And that is the truth. Like that is... It's... You have to know. It's... And I don't hate formula. It's like... Why can't we just adopt the posture of knowing, hey, I'm really glad the formula exists. If I ever need to use it, I could use it. And don't shove it down my throat, completely dismiss my hard work, actively lobby against more parental leave, and actively lobby against women having the opportunity to pump during work because you want money. They do that, you guys. It's not a lie. It's not a conspiracy. It's like, look into it for 5 minutes. Unfortunately, it's very real. Ugh, and it's like,
crazy.
You can still buy it and need it and be pissed off about how they're working their company. It's just kind of like with cigarette companies in the 80s, lying about stuff and just being like shady. It's a company. It's a business. They want to make money.
Yeah.
Like, and when, to me, when I view it like that, it takes away like any of the hatred that it makes me feel towards those people who I'm like, how can you sleep at night? I'm like, well, you know, they're just like CEOs and stuff. Like they have a company. They're like, what's the most like potent, amazing marketing right now. Oh, using influencers. Okay, we're going to do that. Like, I get why they do it. And as a doctor, it's anti-public health. They're not talking about the risks. It's not supportive of like what we should actually be doing. You know what I mean? I don't know. So that it's, it's complicated. I don't mean to offend anybody. I'm hoping that my intensity is not being misread as anti-formula. My intensity is that it's anti-woman, and it's anti-woman baby, and it's anti the things that we know are the healthiest for the human species. And also because I know the heartbreak that so many of my friends, family, clients, patients have felt because they felt played by this whole system. And that exact like trajectory plan thing that I just outlined about the woman at 3 or 4 months postpartum is a rat race reel that happens all the time. And it's like, oh, it doesn't have to be like this. Like, why we need to be really actively trying to support women through that phase so that they can get to the other side and continue to have what they want for their baby. Because so many of these women are trying so hard to breastfeed. They want it. They enjoy it. They like it. They want to have that. And even if they don't like and enjoy it, they want to give it to their baby for whatever reason. They will grind tooth and nail to be exclusive pumpers. Like, exclusive pumpers, I bow down. I kiss your feet. Like, holy crap. Can you even imagine? Like, I have a really good friend who was an exclusive pumper one time, and it's just like, holy moly, the amount of work and dedication for that. You know, women are, we're not dumb and we're not lazy, and we want what's best for our babies in all ways. And the system is not supportive of so many of these different things. And it's, I'm pissed off at the system, not the people.
I mean, I feel the same way about IVF. I know this isn't about IVF, but it's the same exact thing. It's a tool. Thank goodness it's there. It should not be the first line. It should not be what's promoted. We should not bypass all of the things that we talk about for helping people get pregnant naturally, figuring out why they can't get pregnant naturally. I'm not anti-IVF, but I'm not pro let's run and just do IVF. It's the same thing with formula. Thank goodness it's there. It sucks. It's not perfect. It causes problems. Sometimes it's needed. I have a patient right now in my mind who's literally done everything she possibly could to get pregnant. She had to do IVF. She's the best mom ever. She has had to do everything she could to breastfeed. She literally did not have enough prolactin. I don't know why. We tested her. Her prolactin was so low. She could not make enough milk. So she fed formula. She felt really guilty about it. And it was like, it's okay. Like, this is a choice that you made. And at the same time, we're not just going to be like, everyone, formula, formula, formula. Like, this is ridiculous. These are situations. Thank goodness these tools are here for these situations. But this should not be the norm. And it should not be given lightly. And the, like, what is the behind the scenes? Like, everything that you're sharing, it's all so important. And so I think we are... You know, that's what you're saying. We're not here to offend people or to make them feel bad if they had to make that choice. Like, I don't feel bad that I had to do IVF. I don't think other women, maybe they feel bad, but they shouldn't if they've had to choose formula, especially when they've checked all the boxes, done all the things. Same with C-section.
It's like, just like with C-sections.
I don't feel bad that I had a C-section. I tried everything. There literally wasn't another option for me. That was my option. Thank God there are C-sections available to me, or maybe I would have died, or my baby would have died. Who knows? Maybe not, but like, thank goodness. It's IVF, it's C-sections, it's formula. No one wants these. We should not be pushing them. We should not be making them the norm, making them the first line. Like, that's ridiculous, insane. And if that happens, if that's what you need, that's okay. And it's just like, how can we not hold both of those at the same time?
I don't know. It's like, people cannot do it. Like, they literally cannot have the ability in their brains to say, wow, I love that formula is here. I love that IVF exists. I love that cesareans are an option. And the like standard of health, which is going to produce the best outcomes, would be physiological birth, or it would be like, you know, figuring out the root cause for natural conception, physiological birth, and breastfeeding. Like, it's not like, oh yeah, you have to be crunchy for that. It's like, no, that is what human bodies are like. Why? Because here's the thing about IVF specifically too, is that, and I know we talked about this the other day, we're going to make a whole episode about it, but it like skips and jumps sometimes, not all the time, but sometimes for people, they get shuttled into IVF first. And it skips and jumps over all of these health things that the person actually really needs to work on to be healthy, because you cannot just put a baby in somebody, a body that's not healthy, and expect that it is going to be completely fine. Like, there's, if there's some reason, we need to be working on the reason, and they don't know, quote unquote, they're like, oh, we don't know the reason. That's like, well, then go to school. 'Cause we know the reason. Do these labs, go through this stuff, look at what they're eating. Look at what do you mean? Like, let's focus on that. And again, like if somebody has done all of that and their body is in the, but for some reason conception's not happening or whatever, that's when we go to IVF. It's like, okay, but to skip all of the health stuff is actually negligent. It's putting that person at risk for other things later on because you're just band-aiding. I mean, that's all of pharmaceuticals oftentimes too. It's like, you're just band-aiding these symptoms. It's like, well, but why? Like, what shouldn't you, like, wouldn't you want to know deeper what's going on so we can help work on that? I don't know. I guess there are people that don't care, but I think at the end of the day, though, if they were asked it maybe in a different kind of a way and they weren't like trying to side with one side, kind of like groupthink or mob mentality or thought about or whatever, they actually do have an interest, an inherent interest. There has to be. That's like a life-giving, that's like a biological pull, is like towards survival, right? And humans are interesting because we have all of these man-made ways to circumvent some of this stuff. And it's like, okay, but we can't get too like into that. We need to remember the roots also.
Yeah, we have to have reverence for nature and for the way that nature and natural things happen. And so
yes,
I don't know. I think that we're so well positioned to have this conversation too. And your experience, my experience, we've talked about this a lot. We bring a lot of different unique experiences and we have ways that we think about things. We know a lot of things about stuff and it just...
we know a lot of things about stuff.
We know a lot of things about stuff, but it's like not only from our knowledge, but from like our experiences of just, you know, it all depends. Like this is like my favorite phrase, you know, when people ask me, it just depends. And we need to be able to have all these conversations. And for me, when I see someone who's so dead set on one way or another, it just shows a lack of understanding and a lack of really knowing what is happening. Because if the more you know, the more you realize that it's, there isn't one black and white, and that there is a lot more depth and deep things happening. I mean, again, we could like get into all of
that. I have another t-shirt idea. Ready?
Oh, perfect.
Dogma highlights ignorance.
Oh, yeah. That's great. That's a great quote.
It really does.
And a lot of people probably don't even know what that means. So if anyone's listening and they have someone in their mind, like pause it and really listen to that. Yeah, dogma, meaning like I'm so strict and set on this one way, highlights ignorance, that you are ignorant. And I see this a lot in people who are very extreme on one side. It's like, yeah, you are so ignorant. Like you clearly have never worked with patients. You clearly don't have a lot of people in your life that you know.
Yeah, world experiences, like different privilege levels, different things that are going on. Like
what is happening? Yeah. Yeah, and I'm sure I have my own dogmas with my own ignorance.
Of course.
But
everybody has their blind spots and nobody's perfect. But
yeah,
I think that's one of the benefits of naturopathic medicine too, is just being able to see how the root cause is so individual. Mm-hmm. And so then you have this lens that you go into every appointment with, every person, every way that I look at any problem, that way that you look at any problem, it's so individual. It's not that there's one thing. It's not always vaccines. It's not always mold. It's not, you know, people will get in their thing. They're like, it's not always seed oils.
I know. Like, oh my God. Yeah.
Like it's not seed oils, you guys. Stop. You're so funny. Are seed oils maybe 1/10 or not even 10th, 1/100th of the problem? Yeah, sure. Should we avoid? Yeah. But like the dogma around some of these things is so funny. Anyway,
so funny. Okay. All right. Last question that I have for you.
Yeah, last question.
We're talking about this with sleep. You and I both have different thoughts about sleep, but how is the pressure to get your baby sleeping through the night disrupted breastfeeding relationships and maternal instincts? Like what's the role there?
Yeah. Okay. Well, here's the thing, is that sleep training early on isn't recommended by almost anyone. Mm-hmm. Now, what I will say is if the woman is so sleep deprived and is not getting the support that she needs, and she's like really in a bad place mentally or suicidal or something like that, then sleep train the baby. Okay. Like just do it. Even if it's cry it out, because you being alive is more important than, and I know that's morbid and cryptic, but I say it a lot because it's not actually like that uncommon. I mean, it's, you know, for people to get into that kind of a headspace where it's really, really, really bad. But we need to, again, this is an expectation that we need to have when we become pregnant, when we sign up to become parents, there are certain things that like our society has told us we can do that are actually not great, and that we have to actively choose nature instead, which is normal for a breastfed baby to feed at night. It's normal for so many reasons, especially in the very beginning, in the first 3 months. It's protective of your supply. Their blood sugar cannot regulate and make it completely through the night without milk at some point. It is protective against SIDS because when they're waking and they're rousing and they're having those moments and they're not getting into a super deep sleep, that's protective against sudden infant death syndrome. There's so many different things that, like in nature, back in the day, before modern society, women slept with their babies like all mammals do, right? Co-sleeping was just the norm. And I know you and I both don't co-sleep. We like room share, you know, we co-sleep with our babies like right next to us. We're just not like the up against the body till they're 3 years old kind of co-sleepers. I actually really want that. And I can't have it. I don't know
I would love it too if I could sleep
if you could
better.
sleep. Yeah.
For sure. I would love to snuggle my baby all night. And the women are
I
like, I
know.
sleep better that way. I'm like, great. That's awesome. I don't. I'm literally about to fall asleep driving, and that would be terrible to have my children lose their mother because I'm trying so hard to just sleep with them in the bed, you know? But it's physiologically probably the best thing, just like breastfeeding and just like
It
putting them up
is.
to
Yes,
birth.
exactly. And this is where we've diverged from that. We don't do it and we should, but we don't. And it's like, okay, it doesn't work for us. And so we do the best we can. We co-sleep in the like in a co-sleeper for as long as we can. We room share for as long as we can. And then at some point it's like, okay, we're done, you know? And I think that when's the earliest that you've slept trained? Like, how old was your baby?
Avia was like 4 or 5 months, but I still have fed them through the night. I'm still feeding my baby through the night. I just get up, go feed them, and go back to sleep. I know some
Okay,
women
so
like.
but they were not waking up and then you would feed them when they would wake up. You would just dream feed them.
With Avia, she was much easier. I dream fed her, and we probably sleep trained, and she was sleeping through the night on her own with a dream feed at like 4 or 5 months. Cade has never, ever.
Well, he did one time for like a month and then
He did
now
for
it's
like
been.
a month, and then he's gotten literally 13 teeth. He has 13 teeth, you guys. He's 1 year old. 12 months, he has 13 teeth, and every tooth has been 6 months of prep and then bursting through the tissue. 6 months for each of them. The math is insane. He just will not sleep. So I feed him a lot more through the night. I still am breastfeeding and stuff like that. But yeah, with
But okay,
Avia,
so
it
you
was.
would dream feed her. So she wasn't going 12 hours at night with no milk.
She was probably going 8. But
Okay,
she was
and
a
see,
good
like
sleeper.
that's yeah, that she was a really good sleeper. And my son was a really good sleeper too. He would go sometimes 10 hours on his own and I would wake up in a panic with mastitis because I wouldn't have woken up because I was exhausted. And boom, like, you know. So some babies are going to do that. And again, you can follow their lead if they're doing it on their own and they're gaining great weight. Both Avi and Gage were both huge, fat, chunky babies gaining tons and tons and tons of weight. So that's a component too. But the vast majority of babies, the more normal sleeper would be like Cade, actually, I would say. And the rest of mine too. Sloane was not a normal sleeper, but Sunday and Savi have been like more normal sleepers where they want to feed a couple times a night, like t twice a night, sometimes 3 times a night, I would say is really, really normal. Even up through the first year, people don't want to hear that, but it is really normal. Now, do they need it? What I would say is that we need to just like commit to feeding our babies at night for the first 6 months. And that means in a 12-hour period, they need to be fed at some point. So even you dream feeding, and a lot of people do that, and they think that like we have to remember that a dream feed at like 10 or 11 p.m. or whatever, right before you go to bed, and but the baby's been in bed since like 7, you know, you're still feeding. That's a night feed, and then you're getting them through, you know. So we are still having those benefits to our milk supply. Some people do prefer to get up and pump. I am not one of those people. I am like I would dream feed you two or three times a night if I
Oh,
needed
yeah.
to, then
I would get
pump.
up like every hour and feed my baby rather than pump.
I know, me too. I just cannot. I hate it. I hate it
I
so
hate
much. But I also don't respond to a pump anymore. But I don't know. We'll see. Anyway, so early sleep training though, the pressure to have the like I forget what the name Ferber method stuff like Ferber I think is cry it out. But there's like some schedules that are out there, some old school books where it's like your baby can be sleeping 12 hours a night by 12 weeks is a really great way to completely destroy your breast milk supply. And some people will skate through it. They have an oversupply and they're okay. And so then they continue to spread that this is a good way for people to be doing things and that everybody should be doing this. And it's like, no, you're the outlier. That is not good for you. I'm super happy. Like, I am really happy that you're sleeping and that everything's going well and that it was minimal crying for your baby. And that is like the top, like 0.0005% of babies are going to be doing that. Most babies are going to have nothing to do with any of that kind of plan. But more than anything, it destroys your milk supply. Like, you need to be having probably two feeds per night, every single night in the middle of the night, whether or pumps, whatever you want to do. But it's good for your baby to have that time on you and to regulate with your nervous system and regulate with your heartbeat and your respiratory rate. Like there are benefits to it too. So that's my last point. So like to summarize things that ruin breastfeeding. First of all, is the way that birth goes if we are not ready to mitigate the impacts of certain interventions that take place. Second thing would be scheduling. So, or preventing your baby from feeding for long periods of time, because that's what the advice that you were given, usually in a hospital setting. Three would be expecting your baby to have a really big full feed every single time that they have a feed or the opportunity to feed. And so forgetting the idea that babies snack sometimes, or that they nurse at the breast for comfort and to fall asleep and for warmth and coziness and because they're bored and because all sorts of different reasons. And so if they cue, you just put them on the breast. It's like, just, it's very, mm-hmm. it's a lot simpler actually. And like, you know, the erroneous idea that weighted feeds are law. We don't want to think that they are law, because they're not. Number four would be formula marketing and combo feeding. And then the perfect storm of like going back to work 3 to 4 months, sleep regression, pumping, I don't have enough milk, I'm going to top off with formula. And now it's the slow erosion over the next couple of months of milk supply. Mm-hmm. And then number five would be early sleep training, because our breasts need that signal output at night. Your baby needs it at night. And it's just a really easy thing to have a big impact over just even a couple of weeks.
Yeah. I love that. This was so good. Oh, such a good conversation. You're amazing. And I'll keep telling you, I don't care. We'll work on those shirts. And thank you.
Thank you.
In order for others to hear this information, please leave a review with Apple Podcasts, subscribe, and share with a friend who would benefit from this content. Please remember that the views and ideas from this podcast are for informational purposes only and are not intended to be a substitute for medical care of any kind, including the diagnosis and treatment of any disease. Consult with your provider before integrating any of this information into your own healthcare plan. A healthier future starts now, and it starts with you.